love, blessings, and honor. Welcome to the show. I'm your co-host, Eyes Red.
And I'm your co-host, Reality Soldier.
And we are
Garvey's Ghost in the Spectrum of Roots.
Yes. Yeah. So sit on that. So yeah, we're going on my
head. I would style him up on me.
Yes, so we're back for another episode, people, and today's guest is the one and only Cecil Rubin. So greetings, Cecil. How are you doing, King?
Greetings, Rastafari.
Yeah, we're honoured to have you here, man, and thank you for coming.
Big honour.
And representing. Honor. I don't know, we know you have a great history to give to the people there, you know what I mean? So let's start from the top. We're going to take it from the beginnings, where you was born, your early childhood, that kind of vibe, your parents, sibling, you know, early school year. So take it from the top. Where was you born?
Where you born? Where you come from?
See,
oh, we got
it now.
I was born in a Clarendon, you know?
See?
A little place called Guava Grong, you know?
Okay.
In Clarendon, and Crawfield is the community, you know?
See?
Yeah, I born and grew up there. You know, I was a young youth as a farmer up there before we moved to the Kingston up Jewsland.
Right.
Just on the border line, the gully bank between Waterhouse and Jewsland, Mullines Road and them thing there, you know?
Seen.
Yeah.
Seen.
Yeah, and then, you know, there was the early days of me, and then we come to England, you know, and reside in England. I went to Brixton College, and we come to England. That's in the early 70s. I went to Brixton College.
Right.
It was about 70, 71 or something like that, you know?
Okay.
And study electrical engineering.
See?
You know, get my certificate in electrical engineering and thing, you know?
Okay.
And them time they start play a sound system for, you know, some one of the prominent sounds in Brixton, you know, it was by the name of Durasco. Mm,
okay.
Yeah, and I used to play him sound, lift up in box and them kind of thing there. Because I was really into music from a young, early age because My graduation into the music was through rock steady periods.
Yes.
Right.
I was a bit too young for the ska.
Okay.
So the rock steady period came between 67 and 69. Yeah, 67, 69. And I used to listen to a lot of the tune that my brother used to play.
Okay.
Because my brother was a youth who used to buy a Wolfa record, Heptones, Gay Lads, Brent Down, you know, all those artists, them, Alton Ellis. And I was fascinated by the music, especially the harmonies. Because those are the time when Rocksteady used to get a lot of harmony groups, especially the Heptones.
Right.
And it used to fascinate me, you know. And that made me get a love for the music during the Rocksteady period, you know.
So those harmonies, that was kind of the feed off of vibes that the Jamaican music industry had from those great R&B.
That's right.
Impressions.
Yes. Right. Yeah, Curtis Mayfield, yes. Impression. A lot of the artists them learned from those artists, you know. Yeah. Man like Derek Harriott, Delroy Wilson, Alton Ellis, you know, a lot of great groups. Them time there was groups.
Yeah.
Groups in the rock steady period, and it was really nice, you know.
Arrogant.
Yeah. So when me, you know, their college and leave college, I used to go and lift up the Rascal box and thing until I become a selector upon the sound. And we used to be like the roughest sound in a Brixton.
Okay.
Same time there, you know, roughest sound in a Brixton. And we started to play the Rascal until I get a chance. My father give me £1,000.
Wow.
And we use £1,000 and build a little sound system for myself.
Wow.
You understand? And we call it Duke Cecil.
See?
All right.
Yeah, Duke Cecil. And it was a little party song we used to play, you know.
£1,000 must have been a lot of money in them days to be
no, that £1,000 was a lot of money because with that £1,000, I buy 2 pieces of amp and get a preamp.
See?
You understand? And we used to go teeth wood and them thing there.
As
and
you
do.
And wire.
Yeah, and build up with box them and thing. I had 2 bass box. And a mid-range box and some taps, you know.
See.
We used to just go and play in a blues dance and get popular in a blues dance, you know, in a Brixton. Because Brixton was there, you know.
Right.
You know, and Duke Cecil was a name where it was all young youths and thing, and we built up a good little following and them thing there, you know, until me get a big following.
Mm.
He used to follow me, you understand? And then moving down to around about 72 and all them time, you know. We kind of start, I look on the root side of thing, you know. Because them time it was party and girls and thing.
Yeah.
We start look on the root side of things, you know. Culture side.
Yeah.
Because 72, a youth wake up in a Jamaica name, Big Youth.
Yeah.
You know, it's Jah Youth.
That's right.
And you come up with an LP called Reggae from Another Man. I don't know if you remember that LP there. It's Reggae from Another Man. And another tune on it called I Pray Thee.
See.
You know, and I listen to the tune and I say, boy, that tune is my favorite Psalms. See. You know, why does the Eden range and the people imagine such vain things?
Yes.
False kings and rulers have the cert to counsel together against the Lord and against his be you the chant.
Yes,
that.
Man.
And choose that one of my favorite Psalms where my granny and them used to always read to me and think, we say, wow, that's kind of licked me.
Yeah.
And it changed my life, you know?
Mm.
And I start looking at the Rastafari faith, you know? And
see.
Start becoming Rasta in a sense. And, you know, those were my early days. And with them time they in a Brixton used to have some Rasta community, some brethren named Pepe Judah, Malachi, Bingy, you know? I start move around them.
See.
As Rasta elders and start to listen to them and what they must say. And me get me little teaching as Rasta through those bridging, you know,
right.
And thing. And that was coming up around about 73, coming into 74.
Golden age.
Yeah.
Golden age, 73, 74, you know.
Yeah.
And then at the same time now, me even meet Bob Marley within that period of time, you know.
Go on.
You know, and... them time Bob Marley not dread yet, you know. Bob Marley didn't have him little afro here and thing, you know.
Yeah.
And he came and done a few shows in England, you know, like clubs and these little thing and thing, you know. We get to know him and thing through those same brethren.
Right.
Because those brethren was like, through them was the elder Rasta in the community at the time. Them get to know Bob and start bring Bob around, you know, us and, you know, them start teach Bob about Rastafari. Yeah.
Okay. They weren't supposed to
be because Bob never know nothing about Rasta right. Them time. Right. Them bridging there.
See.
Teach Bob about Rasta. No matter what you hear anybody say. We can tell you. I was there, I'm witness, you know?
All right.
Okay.
And Bob teach those bridging teach Bob about Rasta. And then Bob decides, say, well, why am I take up the Rasta vibes then? They still never drill up him head yet, you know?
Mm.
You understand? Because I think Bob start drilling him here about 75.
Okay.
Yeah, about 75. About 74, 75, Bob start dread. You know why me know that? Because me start dread the same time.
See.
You understand? Okay. When Bob start dread, me start dread.
See.
Because when Bob come back to England about 76, after certain things happened at Jamaica, me see Bob with him dreadlocks long. And me said to Bob, said, boy, imagine me and you start the same time. And look, where for your dread there? Mine's still picky. I want to go on. What you are do? You understand?
Yeah.
But true, it was mixed.
And
then ear grew fast. Yeah. You know, that's the reason why I'm empty there, you know? So within the mid-70s there, we were on Brooks and I preach Rastafari, right? And we changed the song from Duke Cecil to Jah Cecil now.
Okay.
You understand? We call Rasta thing. And
yeah, man.
It's called Jah Cecil and rare. And then... the brethren them, the Rasta brethren them said to me, say, well, because we get a place at Kennington at that time,
right.
Named St. Agnes Place, we call it Rasta House,
yeah.
Right in the Kennington. We get a place down there. And them say, why you not bring your son down there and be resident son?
Oh.
So me bring my son down there, my son was a resident son down there. And me change the name from Duke Cecil now again. And we call it King Rastafari.
You
understand?
Statement.
Yeah. Because we the Rasta House.
Yeah, man.
And thing, we call it King Rasta. So we resident down there. We play a whole lot of song come down there and play with me, you know.
There was
Mombasa, Coxon,
see?
Fat Man. All of them come down there and play with me. We was a resident song because we was Rasta and so forth.
Mm.
You know, you understand? The only person who never come down there and play was Jah Shaka.
Right.
Because I want to tell you something to you, you know, where a lot of people don't know, you know. When Shaka start theme song, you know.
Mm.
Me start my song before Shaka, you know.
See.
And me play Rasta music before Shaka, you know.
See.
Because when Shaka start theme song, he come see me and play Rasta music.
See.
You see the style where I play?
Yeah.
Me play that long
King
time
David's
before. Style. Yeah. Because Shaka used to play a song name, I think Freddie Clover's song or something like that. Before him build theme song, you know.
Mm.
So before him build theme song, I could say we start roughly the same time with song.
Mm.
You understand? But me know me love my song before Shaka.
Yeah.
But it's roughly within that year,
yeah.
We start with song together and them thing there. and Shaka start play Rasta music and them thing. But me, I play Rasta a long time because we amongst the Rasta community in a Brixton, yes, you say, with Jassess and thing, you know.
So your early introduction was in your teenage to Rastafari was in your teenage years then.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. That's right. That's okay.
And you're moving in the Rasta house, and your sign is called Ja.
Ja Revelation Music, but I wasn't Ja Revelation. That,
yeah.
Like we said,
when you went to the Rasta house,
King Rastafari. King Rastafari. Right. See, those were the days. One of the best days of my life.
Right.
Because at them time, they beat out Baba and everything and thing, you know. Because the other day, I go watch the Bob film, you know, and I was a bit disappointed with the film because a lot of things in there, it wasn't true, you know.
See.
Because we was there and we know what happened, you know. Especially the part where them say Bob was in England because him get shoot at Jamaica and him come to England, which is true. That is very true. But when him come to England, amongst we him there, you know.
See.
Them not depict that same amongst the Rasta community, the Rasta house, you know. Amongst we him there, him sit down and eat and they with we and when he might go up on any tour, we was like him security everywhere. Right. But we with the park where they might show him I play ball in the park. And we might play with dinner.
Yes,
are we really that, you know? When the time you see him play ball with people, are we the Rasta community might play with over Kennington Park or Battersea Park? Yeah. And them thing there. And when Claudie Mossop and Bucky Marshall, because we know them youth there from Jamaica, you know, yes, and one from Tivoli and one from Matthews Lane. When them come to England to ask Bob to come back to Jamaica for the peace concert, we arranged the meeting, you know.
See.
Nothing, no them simple, you know. Wow. We arrange in a Rasta house, the meeting take place, you know.
See.
You understand? Because we get Bob to come down, and we get Claudie Mossop them to come down, and he's in the kitchen. See. We sit down and at the meeting with Bob and Claudie, and Bob decides, say, yeah, I'm going to go back to Jamaica with them and do the peace concert and thing there. But in the film, me see, them show like Bob walking at the park and Claudie and Bucky just suddenly walk up and say, hey, so, Bob,
yeah. See, idiot. Then just Bucky
them just buck up in the park. When I see that park, they laugh. Two people don't know, you know. Yeah, but that's how it goes, you know.
Yeah, well, Hollywood, should I come get the history from you?
but you see, the thing where we say about the film, they're not come and ask we but for anything tell the real story. It's just something where Rita just make up with her head and say, yeah, let's go with that.
Right.
To make herself look good. You understand? But Is we know Bob. We know everything about Bob talk to we and tell we everything.
Right.
You understand? We know everything about the political things and why he get shot and who shot him, everything. Oh, we know everything, you know.
Yeah.
But it not even Ziggy or any of the sons them or the daughters know about them father. Because they were little kids at the time.
Right.
So they couldn't know nothing about them father. Yeah, it's what them see or hear or what the mother tell them.
You
understand? But it's we, the Rasta community, who know Bob history. I just saw it go, but they don't come ask me nothing, you understand? Mm-hmm. Even a brethren by the name of Alan Skillcole, one of Jamaica top baller. You understand? We play football with them out there, you know?
See.
Right? He was Bob's road manager.
Yeah.
Everywhere Bob
and
go.
And chef as well, no?
And chef too.
Yeah.
You understand? Anywhere Bob there, Skillcole is there, you know? Yeah. Right? Me never see Skillcole mentioned no time in the film at all. Once. And Skillcole would tell you the whole history of Bob if they did want the real history. Because Skillcole was there all the time. Skillcole is Jamaican national footballer.
Yeah,
you understand? Yeah. So, I them thing there, you know, a little thing, you know. But that was 70s.
Yeah.
That was the 70s, going up into the mid-70s, till Bob go back to Jamaica and them thing there. Mm. Them time, they still there, Rasta House.
Mm.
Them time, we start the organization, the 12th Tribe of Israel.
Mm. Okay.
In Rasta House. Because this is where it starts, you know.
Right.
In Rasta House. And me and a few brethren, we lived there in 1979.
Okay.
You understand? Because there was a split within the Rasta community and so forth and things.
See.
So there was a division make. Some man wanted to do something else and stay in the house. We did want to do something else.
Right.
But the two couldn't work
there. So we
decided to leave. And we done a do the right thing at the time, because if you look now, there's no Rasta house. It doesn't exist more.
Yeah.
You understand? It licked down and flats make. But where we leave, we buy our premises, and we still have that premises from today, which is worth over £1 million.
Okay.
So you see, we done the right thing. So, you know, people can say what they want to say, but you know, we move and we know why we move. Same. It's like we saw a vision and right. we looked ahead and said, this not gonna work, you say, you know.
Same.
You understand? Because Rasta always end up turning to a drugs then and same. People sell coke and weed and all them stuff down there till it get mashed up. You understand me?
It's like,
yeah. So 1979, we leave and we start function as a 12 tribe of Israel. You know, go around the place and we buy a place up at Streatham there and thing. And this is where my life within the 12 tribe of Israel really started, you know, in the sense. Although it started down at Rasta House still. You know, because even Bob is a member of the 12 tribe of Israel. Dennis Brown's a member of all them artists we see, all members of the 12 tribe. So 79 we start and we are doing things as 12 tribe and 12 tribe them say they want a sound for keep dances. Because the dance was a part of funding the organization.
That's right.
So I volunteer my sound.
See.
And for the use of the 12 tribe of Israel. And it was me and two other brethren, them had a little smaller sound than me. And we join our sounds together. And we call it Jah Revelation Music.
See.
You understand? The trio, we did have different names, but we call it Jah Revelation Music. And we started to play all the 12 tribe of Israel dance. Yeah. For many years, where a lot of people know who went to those dances and see. And some of the best dances always full out, all over the country.
Every month
we have a different color.
Look forward to the next month.
Yeah, every month a different color, different color.
I did love that energy.
And that was a piece of history within itself, you know.
Absolutely.
And that was Jah Revelation Music, where I did have some good DJs on it. You see, that time I stopped playing out on the road. I was just playing for 12 Tribe.
Right.
I never played for nobody else but 12 Tribe, just 12 Tribe dances. Right. That is why it's so like Saxon and all them get away from me, you know, because through me never dip on the road, Saxon come with all these bag of DJ and say, yeah, them start the DJ thing. But we did have all those DJs before Saxon, because we did have a set of DJ, Ambassador, Brother Culture, Preacher Levi, Deacon Judah. We had our whole set of DJ, we were wicked. And you know the difference between our DJ and Saxon and all of them is a pure Bible and culture thing. We are chatting. We're not chatting no foolishness. All right. But let me say, it was just in-house.
Mm.
We never really play out and things. So Saxon rise up in the 80s and them thing then start play and get a lot of acclaimed Coxon and the whole of them. Because we never play with no sound, I just 12 tribes.
Right.
But you got that energy when you got to that 12 tribes dance, it was like yeah, I got church. Mm. The vibe was beautiful amongst the patrons.
That's right.
Respect to the sister.
Yes.
The whole thing is that you're not the pan of galley's thing, you're got for.
Yeah. It was just a cultural vibes and everything. Yeah, and everybody did they enjoy
everybody
themselves.
Nice
you feel safe in the dance. Yes. You know, so no trouble now happening at the dance.
Beautiful.
We set those trends. And when you see certain dance now, even with the dance hall fraternity I do with colours dance. We start the colours thing, you know. Nobody else never do colour thing, you know, and everybody have to wear colour. And we start those things.
Yes.
And everybody follow we and start, you know. Yeah. Do for them thing as colours.
And like Mr. Earl, me did like the little card them for every month.
Every month we have a card.
And my uncle have one. Me just have put it out there. My uncle have one leave over.
Was it for your man?
No, I don't think it was actually.
See.
But me have it and it sit on my uncle piece. It's been there for years.
Yeah, well, that's when we started in the 80s. In the 80s, we started doing all the dances and everything. Until, you know, into the 90s, early 90s. What happened then, so Revelation sound and the equipment started to get old now, you know, and we needed some new equipment. But remember, you know, I did tell you, so we kind of donated ourselves and our sound for the 12 tribe.
Yeah.
So the equipment did kind of get old and mash up. At them time, a valve amp and everything we are using and all them something there, you know. So the organization decided they're going to spend some money and build a sound. So I went out and bought all the equipment from Jatobis.
Right.
Jatobis did build all the equipment, all transistor, new style, new everything. And we never call it Jah Revelation no more, we call it the 12 tribe of Israel sound.
See.
So it, now the sound belonged to the organization, the official of Fidem sound.
Right.
So Revelation was like defunct.
See.
There was no more the Revelation, it's just the naming of the year, you understand? And we started to play the 12 tribe of Israel, so that 12 tribe dances and things. No more Jerry. Because if you remember the dance card, them have Jerry Revelation.
Yeah.
And then later on, coming in the 90s now, it was 12 tribe of Israel songs on it. You understand?
Yeah.
So that was the period where we switched over. So we are play. And what happened now is that there was a lot of younger youths grow up in the organization and grow bigger. We kind of say, well, we want to pass the mantle on and make them start dealing with the 12 Tribe of Israel sound. So we, like me, all the MCs, we call out and say that them, you know, we kind of took a back seat and met the younger one, them start dealing with it. Mm. But me as a whole sound man, I hitch me because I love sound.
See?
I say, I can't just sit down and not play sound and do sound. Because even in the 12 Tribe dances, I started to promote and help promote the stage shows, because we used to have stage shows and things.
Yeah.
I was part of the promotional body and promote the stage show. That's where I really start getting to the promotional side of it during the 12 Tribe. Although before that, I was still putting on little shows in the community halls in the mid-70s and everything, the little small things.
What, with bands and musicians?
Yes, and everything, but it was little small little thing. Mm. But when we reach the 12 Tribe, we start putting on little bigger things now, because 12 Tribe are a big organization, and we play a Fulham Town Hall, Wandsworth Town Hall, big places, and a bigger thing. Well, I was part of the promotional body making these things happen.
Right.
So I had the promotional skill within me. When I sit down, after we give over the sound, I was just sitting down doing nothing. I said to myself, say, you know what? I'm going to revitalize back the Revelation music.
Okay.
I'm going to revive that back. So what I've done, I went out and played as the Revelation song without no sound system. See. Just like how you see the man with them laptop go out and play a song.
Oh, okay, yeah.
I go with my little record them and go play a little piece of the Revelation. I said, no, this not working. I'm a sound. I want a sound.
See.
Yeah, come with the second lick now, the Revelation music. So it goes.
Yeah, man. So I decided, so I want to relaunch back the Revelation music, you know. You understand? And because the name was just up there. Mm. You understand? And the name is what we did use in the 12 Tribe, and it's the name where everybody did know. Yeah. Although we have the 12 Tribe of Israel sound now, everybody did know the Revelation music.
Yeah.
You understand? We go out there and get a lot of the people then to come join the 12 Tribe, you know. Because when we're out there play, because we know a lot of people don't like to come to meetings, but they like to go dance.
Yeah.
But, so we say, all right, we are going to bring the meeting in the dance.
See.
So when you come to the dance, what you would hear in the meeting, you are hearing at the dance. See.
All right.
So that's how, that was the tactic we used when we was playing for the 12 Tribe of Israel.
Cool.
You understand? So everybody knows Jerry Revelation music. So it's just there in the year. I said, no, we can't just make the name just dead off, so.
Yeah.
I want to rebuild. Like me say, I started to go around with my little record player, but I said I wanted the equipment. Because I'm a sound man from the early 70s. So little by little, bit by bit, me build up my box there and buy my little amps there and thing until I have a good little sound.
Will you go back to Keith to get them out again?
No.
See.
The only thing I went to Keith for was a preamp.
Preamp,
you understand? The amps was all different builder and different thing, you understand? But the 12 Tribe Israel song was completely Keith.
Yeah.
You understand? Yeah. But Keith started to get too busy, a little busy,
I forget very
things
busy, yeah.
from Keith and things. So I had to look elsewhere. But I got a preamp from him, which today I'm still using that preamp.
See.
You understand? Although I had a lot of preamp, but I still have that same preamp using. And so Jerry Relation was established now. You understand? This was in the 90s and thing, you know? Late 90s. And I can't remember the date now. I can't remember everything. Dates and them thing there. We start establishing Revelation. We play out this one, this one, this one. Until we reach a stage. I'm jumping a gun still, you know? We reach a stage now where we get an opportunity to come to Utanani. A lot of people know the Utanani. Utanani was a place where always the in Brixton. It used to be called the George Cannon Pub.
Yeah.
And then changed the name again to the Hobgoblin Pub.
See.
And then some Scottish people come down and buy it and call it the Utanani. Oh, right. Yeah, because they have a pub in Scotland, in Inverness, called Utanani. So they wanted another place in London called Utanani, and then go and buy that place there. You understand? And that go on and go on in there, you know? And somebody must have tell them about me, I don't know, and them ask for see me. I went down there, had a meeting with them, and them tell me their plans, which they like to do, because their plan was to turn it into a Scottish pub.
Wow.
But it never worked.
You know, in the heart of Brixton, yeah?
Right. It never worked, because it just empty.
Yeah, but the red, and green kilt.
It never worked. You understand? So they said, they'd like somebody to kind of build up them Thursday night and thing, you know, because you know, them Friday and Saturday, them have a few people in there, but Thursday they're the like. So I say, all right, I'll come there. And that's when I start playing my sound, Jah Revelation music.
Okay.
In there, you understand? And the stage at the time in Newton, and it was on the floor. It never had a stage big up, high. It was actually on the floor. So it was just like a little place, and, you know. So me look around and with me ideas. I say, boy, I'm going to make the stage higher, you know. You understand? And sort out the stage and dressing room and the structure of the place. So we done all that, and it's how you know it now.
Right.
You understand? And we started to bring in some little shows in there. The first show I did bring in there was the Congos.
Wow. Okay, wow. So
yeah, good Congos. Oh. And then we bring in the Eptones. See? You understand? Because we have the links there, man, and thing there from Outer Road and Jamaica and everything. Yeah. We just had certain links. And we start bringing in there, and people kind of fascinated. Oh, them artists there come there, so that little pub there. You understand? They couldn't believe it. Right. So people just couldn't believe so them artists. So
can I just ask you?
Yeah.
Rewinding a little bit, when you was doing the shows for the 12 tribes, was you wasn't bringing no artists from Jamaica them time then?
No, because the 12 tribes have them own artists.
See.
We had artists amongst the organization.
Right.
You understand? Like I mean, we used to bring in some big artists. We didn't bring them out. It's when them die out.
Okay.
Like Freddie McGregor. Because they're members of 12 Tribe.
Yes, sir.
You understand? Dennis Brown's a member of 12 Tribe. Because we done shows at the Brixton Academy with Dennis Brown, Freddie McGregor. 12 Tribe show, you know, and everything there. You understand?
So it's from an earlier time who's bringing artists or linking with artists still,
Yeah. And at the same time, women there, Utanan is still, you know, me still I work with 12 Tribe, you know.
Oh.
In the promotional thing, you know, even up to now still.
Yeah.
I'm still working with them, putting on a show because I did put on a show with Morgan Heritage.
Yeah.
You know, with Morgan Heritage for 12 Tribe. Rest in peace, Peter. Up the Coronet in Elephant and Castle.
See, yeah,
a big show, big show. Venue, you understand?
Yeah.
So we put on shows, and I've done these are before I went to Uten and I said, I don't even tell you them history.
That's why I said I wanted to rewind and find out if you bring any artists and things from before then.
Anthony B, Israel Vibration,
Morgan
Heritage. This is before I went to Uten. Like, a lot of people feel, say, my promotional start at Uten. But before that, I was doing shows, you know, and still working for 12 Tribe at the same time. Right. But I had my street vibes when I do my thing at street and thing, which I never really talk about. I just jump and and thing.
So what was the street vibes then? What, you selling arts and crafts? We had the winners of street vibes.
No, I was playing my sound out the street.
Right, see.
And any promotion show at home, my sound I was a player.
Right.
Because my philosophy was this. People, I can't sit down and wait for people to come book me or give me work. I have to do it myself.
That's right.
And that's how I always be put on my own things. You understand? And me have my sound. My sound is there. I know artists. I know how to organize because I get my organizing skill in 12 Tribe.
Right.
You understand? So, like I said, I put on, you know, loads of shows before I reach Utanani. It's only when I reach Utanani now, I put on more shows more consistently.
Right.
You understand? Because I had a place structure
where
I could put on shows regular. I didn't have to go look for place.
See.
So, Utanani became this place where I could put on shows, and one of the next artists after we do Eptones and Congos, I got Aswad there. And when I bring Aswad there, oh gosh, the place was phenomenal. You know, Aswad at the time was big and thing, you know. Aldo Brinsel wasn't there, because I didn't leave the group from then.
But
it was Jummy and the guitarist, and that show was phenomenal. That was a phenomenal show. You know, and then after that, me bring Janicky and Carol Thompson up there.
Okay.
Whoa, again. So, you know, I say, well, things I work at Utanani. And we put on a whole party up there. Because I used to put it on every week, we bring a show.
Yeah.
Every week, you know. That's 52 shows a year.
And then sometimes the weekend as well, isn't it? Like the bank holiday weekend.
And sometimes bank, so you know the thing.
Oh, you mean that?
Yeah, man, bank holiday, man, I put on a special treat.
Yeah.
Put on my birthday, free for everybody to come and everything there.
Yeah.
So I brought a lot of artists to Utanani. It's a matter of who has not come there.
See.
In the foundation world and the revival world, Linval Thompson, Junior Mervyn, you know, Wailing Souls, you know, Junior Marvin, Linval Thompson, Mrs. Sugar Minot, Michael Rose.
Gregory.
Gregory, I was just about to get Gregory down there before him die.
Well,
I was just about to get Gregory to come out with the nanny, and the man passed away. Well, Jah, rest him soul in peace. So him is one of the man I never get, you know?
See.
Big youth me get down there, Dillinger, Yellow Man, you name them.
Run cars.
This is what I'm saying, like, you know, the history and the promotion to big man.
Yeah, man. I mean? I see Griffith down there, you know? It's a matter of who I have not bought there.
See.
Within the 12 to 13 years I've been there at Utanene. And I have to say that was one of the best time of my life in the promotional world.
Mm.
Because a lot of the artists I bring there, they wouldn't have got no work unless I did bring them. Because they were kind of waving off and nobody now booked them and thing.
Yeah.
So I took it on myself to bring a lot of the foundation artists.
Because
most of them I cater for. Although I put on other artists, especially English artists and those forth. But from Jamaica, I put on a lot of the foundation artists. And that's what built Utanani. Mm. And made Utanani get a worldwide. Because nobody never know Utanani until I go down there. You understand? And anyway, we go into the world, people always say, Cecil Ruben, Utanani, Utanani. I say, wow, what's so far you reach?
Yeah,
and everything there, you know, and, you know, it was a joy.
Yes,
it was a joy. But I always get the feeling that people feel, say, just Utanani. Mm. I start at, you know, which is far from the truth, because I was doing promoting big artists before I even reach a Utanani. You understand me? I say, because a lot of people don't know some of the shows. Well, a lot of people do know. But like I said, majority of people know me from Utanani.
Yes.
Mm. You understand? And I have to give thanks to my brethren, Mikey, you know, Irieites. I don't know if you know Irieites. Because me and him used to work together and do a lot of shows together. Because I remember with
the same record label?
No, not the Irieites record label. A promoter, Mikey. He did bring Abyssinians the other day.
Okay.
And thing, you know?
Right.
So, me and him did do a few shows as well, you know, out there. We did put on a Barry Salmon big show. One of Barry Salmon first shows, you understand? And we did have that up, what do you hear her name? The Apollo, is it the Apollo?
Hammersmith
Apollo, yeah. We do a big show with Barry Salmon up there. Successful sellout show, you know? And that was propelled Barry Salmon to become one of the great artists, you understand? And because that show was very good, very good show. And we done shows with Anthony B, like me say, Israel Vibration, you know, and even, sometimes I can't remember some of the
things.
You know, what we do, Margaret Heritage, me say we do a big show with Margaret Heritage up at the Coronet and so forth. We do one with Jamel, you remember Jamali?
See,
Jamali. All those artists we bring, man. And there was a place in Tottenham Court Road called the Astoria.
A few
shows we done up there with Israel Vibration, Jamali, Anthony B, and these things. And these are, like I say, it's all before I went to Utanani.
Mm.
And plus, I done shows with English artists, them, and so forth, you know?
So did you ever get a chance to have, like, any of these big artists on the sound itself?
Johnny Osborne was one of the main man I did have my pan Revelation sound. Because this was in the 80s.
Right.
Because we did bring Johnny Osborne over and we did bring him to do some things with 12 Tribe and on my sound at the same time. And we did a couple shows with him, a little mini tour with him all over the place. You understand? So Johnny Osborne was an artist where we used extensively. And get whooped a dub off of Johnny Osborne. and so forth. Johnny Osborne was our singer at the time. And we had another singer, I don't know if you remember a man named Mr. Spardlin.
Yeah.
Mr. Spardlin, he was a man who was on the sound regular as well. Because we bring from Jamaica
from Jamaica,
you know. So I've been working with a lot of artists, you know.
Same.
A lot of artists and, you know, and also, them time I was working as like a little mini booking agent.
Right.
For a lot of the artists too, when people can book them.
Links.
Book artists through me and so forth. And I've done a few shows with Castro Brown and everything.
Brother
Castro Brown, my brethren and thing, you know. And a lot of work with him.
One time, D-Bro, tell me if this sound anything like near true. One time, I sit down with D-Bro on the yard of Finsbury Park, D-Bro on them. And he said when he met Castro, he was here in London and he see a flyer and it said, appearing tonight, Dennis Brown, blah, blah. And Dennis looked on it and said, how I use my name? I mean, I don't know nothing about this thing here. So Dennis said, I'm going to ride, go down there and see what I go on. Because somebody I use my name for promote. And I'm going down there, Castro put on the thing. That's what D. Brown tell us. I don't know if that was true.
No, well,
and then they became good friends. I don't know.
Well, that could be true. Yeah. I don't know exactly how they meet, but that wouldn't surprise me. That was how it happened on them things.
Yeah.
Because we know Castro good, and Castro is a good man, very good, and I'll help a lot of people. Right. But it wouldn't surprise me if they don't. That show up with
that's enterprising.
Yeah.
But there was a good combination between Castro and Dennis.
Yeah, man. Oh yeah.
And they did have a place on a Battersea Rise in
Battersea. Yeah, the record shop
there. You know, called Deb Music and then things.
Yeah.
15, 16, 17.
Yes. A whole lot of great things that come out of Deb Music.
Yeah.
You know? Junior Delgado, 15, 16, 17, yeah. And things. And Dennis Brown released a lot of great tunes on the Deb label and everything there, you know? And it was a good partnership between them, you know? And they become good brethren. Yeah.
And that was before the Yvonne Special label, innit?
Yes, that's right. Yeah, because the Yvonne Special label come out from there, you know?
Yeah, see.
You know, because that was Dennis Brown's wife and...
That's
and
right.
Thing, and made a label, you know, accompanying his wife. And Dennis Brown's a man we do a lot of work with, you know. Because me always say, you know, if Dennis Brown was still alive, I would be doing a lot of work with Dennis, you know.
Same.
You know, because Dennis done a lot of work with us in the 12th Tribe. Yes, he's a 12th Tribe member.
Yeah.
And when Dennis come over and we have put on shows with him all over, it's me and Dennis Brown, I move and I drive up and I kind of had to look after Dennis.
Same.
You understand? Yeah. And even when Dennis had him problems, you know, it become a bigger problem for us.
Same.
Because, you know, when people deal with certain substance and things, they don't know themselves. Yeah. And we have to always keep an eye upon Dennis and make sure, say, certain things happen to him.
Yeah.
It's sad, you know? You know, But Dennis Brown was a really good youth. See. He had a loving heart.
Yes.
You know, and him give so much to people. You understand? And people take advantage of him because they know him did have a problem and too, you know? So we had to kind of keep him close
guard
to
him,
us.
Yeah.
You understand? And thing, you know? Anywhere we go, whether him there, America, or Jamaica, we had to really keep Dennis. Cause it was like a treasure.
Yes.
It was a treasure to us,
Crown
you know?
Crown Prince, isn't
it? Yeah, man. Rest in peace, Dennis. We miss you.
Man.
I tell you, man. The only thing I regret, I never met no Wolf a dub with Dennis.
Same,
I got a few, but Dennis was our artist. How many don't have a Wolf a Dennis Brown?
Yeah, for real.
You understand? So, you know, you can,
it's only when you look back now and you think, boy, all these men I've had and I don't do this and I don't
That's right.
You know what I mean?
Well, that's why up at my place now, I have a little studio and thing where we can record artists. And I'm saying, the body will come in and I have to make dub, you know?
That's right.
So most of the people that I brought at Utanani, they all cut dub for me. Because they said, no, you can't come here and do show for me. I mean, that's why I would say, my sound is a song where, you know, even from I was a young youth from in the early 70s, nobody never want to play me, you know.
Right.
Coxon, Drew Creed, none of them want to play me because me and another youth named Neville King.
Neville King.
We was like young youth sound, man, them time there. Neville have true like dirt.
Same.
Me have true like dirt. No man know what I'm playing with, you know.
Same.
As young you, because let me feel shame, young you can beat them big sound. And so, and that was one of the reasons why we started to keep my own little party and dance.
Right.
Because nobody know what I give we as young you.
Yeah.
No chance. So, we said, we do our own thing and so forth. So, I was always a man with tune. Because we used to go back to Jamaica nearly every year, you know. Go get tune.
Yeah.
In the 70s, I used to live down around this studio. Yeah, so Miss Chin and me was, every time I come there, Miss Chin always have a pile of music ready for me, you know, because she know what me want, you know. And me used to live in the shop there and thing and buy a Wolper 45, Wolper 45, this and that, and then go down at South Parade and Joe Gibbs and Wolper Tune Aquarius and thing and boom, boom. You know, and get Wolper Tune and me and Scorpio, I'm a key that, because Scorpio used to live on my road.
Black Scorpio?
Yes, Jack. He used to live on the same road as me and thing, down at Jew's Land. It's truly down there. And Jack used to give me a pile of tunes. So I have tune.
Same.
So I always say, Saxon, Cox, the whole of them get there from me. True, I was in 12 Tribe, you know. True, I was in 12 Tribe, I did with 12 Tribe work, you know. Because anyway, I was on the road. Them time there.
Problem
for all them Sunday. Problem for all them Sunday.
I saw Javit.
Yeah,
the works is the work.
The works is the work. You have to just do the work.
Yes.
But now me back on the street now. Still nobody don't want to play me.
Same?
Yeah, it's like nobody don't want to play me, I think. So me don't mind. Me just play my roots thing and me have a bag of a dog plate, bag of special, bag of everything, you know. Yeah, yeah, so every man want to give me a job, I want to play me. Me never turn down a thing, you know. Yeah, right. So so me say, because I'm a sound man, you know.
Yeah,
my first love is sound system. Yeah. People think he's a promoter and thing, but my first love is sound system. Man. You understand? And old as I am and everything, we can never don't want to play sound. Yeah, we love play sound and thing, you know.
It's wonderful that you still got the set going and still putting in the work, kid.
Yeah, Mr. Put you the team, but me youth them now come up and take the mantle, because them kind of run the sound now. And
because your son used to engineer at Hootenanny at
that's
one
right,
time,
that's right. My son Jerome.
Jerome, that's it.
He was the engineer at Hootenanny and them thing there.
Yeah.
Him kind of run the sound, I deal with the sound and engineering and those kind of things.
Well, Jaime help him, teach him and thing, innit?
No, Jamie. You mean I'm in the security?
No, Jamie.
Oh, Jaime. Jamie, yes, yeah. Jim. I mean, bring Jamie from Spain, come here, you know, because I got to Spain at Rotterdam, because I did some work with the Rotterdam team.
See.
And I see this youth here, and I say, why, you come to England and we give some work, you know?
Yeah.
You come to England and I imply him to come do the engineering at Hootenanny.
Yeah.
I know James is one of the top engineers.
Everywhere.
No. Yeah. They are Jamaica, right? I know, too.
See.
Yeah.
So, man, I work with the Rotterdam team.
Yeah, Rotterdam, Spain.
Yeah, man.
You know, Rotterdam is one of the biggest festivals in Europe at the moment. Yeah. It started in Italy and then moved to Spain.
Because
the Italians, them kind of fight against the weed thing and thing, you know. So they moved to Spain and me started to go Rotterdam. And I'm there enjoying the festival and thing. And I said, wow, what a great festival this, wow. And I can't remember now how me really get involved in the Rotterdam, you know. But I was friend with one of the persons them who's involved in there, and they kind of introduced me to the people them and said, this is the man from Hootenanny.
See.
You understand? Who put on all the artists them and thing. So I find, say, they started to tap into me and get a lot of information out of me because every time them saw me as a person who have Wulpa
links
and thing with them, you know. So they were asking me these questions about artists and we get a few artists for them and thing and where.
See.
You understand? And they said to me one of the times, because I started to bring some artists to Rotterdam for them and put on stage and so forth. Then them said to me one day, say, oh, they love what I'm doing at Hootenanny. If I can bring Hootenanny to Rotterdam.
See.
I said, what do you mean bring Hootenanny? I said, why don't you bring the club? I said, lift up the club and bring a candidate. Them said, no, I want a replica.
Yeah.
Hootenanny.
Right.
So what that was now is that Rotterdam is for 7 days.
Yeah, that's
right. You understand? So they wanted to me to do a club night every night there.
See.
And they gave me a big tent. Mm. They set up a big tent for me. And them say, you can decorate it any way you want.
Right.
But call it Hootenanny and bring who you want and do what you want and thing is yours. Just do that.
So it was like a promotion within the promotion.
Yes, yes. Because there was a because what they had an idea said they wanted to bring some clubs, different clubs from Europe.
Right.
So Hootenanny was from England.
See.
They had another club from Spain, another club from Italy, another club from France.
See.
And they had a line of clubs.
See.
You understand? So I get my tent. Big tent, you know. Yeah. Equipment, sound equipment in there, lights, everything, stage, everything in there.
Good.
So I set up the Hootenanny. And bringing my artists, them, my DJs and everything. It was very good, very, very good. And sell me drinks, just like it. Had my bar and everything.
Yeah, yeah.
So it was actually a Hootenanny. I had a big Hootenanny sign outside and everything. So the people them who come at the festival now, they had a choice.
See.
They could either go to that club or that club or that club. Because, you know, it's a thing. But every night, my tent full.
See?
My tent ram. Just like proper Hootenanny and them thing there. And, you know, it was a joy. Because I never experienced nothing like that before and them thing there. But what happened, there's a thing happened to me out there because we love with beer. Because at the back, we store we barrel of beer, them and thing overnight. Because remember, it's every night.
Yeah.
You understand? And it's like a couple of nights when we go in the morning now for set up back with bar. We find say, all the beer gone.
Mm-mm.
People come to eat for beer. If you say the other club, them neatly, you know.
Sabotage.
Sabotage because they know say,
The Rasta going too good.
Yeah, yeah, going too good. And a couple of nights that happened. And make me lose a lot of money.
See, yeah.
You understand? Because I have to pay for the beer them and all them things there and so forth and pay artists and pay staff. And everything. And I lose a lot of money in that project. So I never bother with it again. See, you know? It just disheartened me because I don't know who teeth it. It just neatly. You understand? They rather than pay, they not replace it. And them say, bro, I have to buy more beer or whatever. I want to buy beer and them thing there. So it kind of cramped the operation.
Mm.
You know, I kind of lose a bit of vibes with it and things, you know. And never really push to go back and do certain things. I do my little things still with them, but my infuser is not as great as when I did first start, you know. Same. So that kind of led me to kind of try and do work with some festivals in England.
Okay.
So I've done a few festivals with some people and them things. I've done Stockwell Festival. I done Windrush Festival, and now we're doing City Splash Festival in Blackwell Park, which is good. It's very good because over the years, we never had the opportunity to do festivals in England. We, as black people, because it's always white people, them kind of get the chance, and we have to work for them and them thing there. And it was never we. So, you know, it's good when we can come together and do our own thing. We could do it, we can do it. Because what they can do, we can do too, you know. We just have to come together and deal with it. And is that what we done? You understand? And we had Windrush Festival, Stockwell Festival, and some other little festival, now the big City Splash Festival, which is a big festival, 30,000 people for the last 3 years, every year we get here. So we know, so we're doing the right thing.
Yeah, man.
And we is now in control of a festival. We can bring who we want, do it how we want, and so forth. And we sure say, it work.
And this is what must be, you've been striving for this for so many years,
isn't
it?
So many years, because it's even from the 80s and until we try to get venue, park or open space to keep our own thing. Because you used to have a festival called One Love, a brethren named Dan.
Dan, yeah.
You used to keep and, you know, every year that we see that festival flop. But me don't know when keep doing it. Me don't know, I wonder if I some laundering money my bad thing. And because every year it flop, but every year I still do it and you do it till it stop now and them thing there. And I say, if him can do it, oh, we can do it.
Yeah.
You understand?
For real.
So we are do it now.
I'm sure people don't really understand the logistics it takes to put on a show, let alone a festival. You know what I mean? Everything that's involved, like from the promotion, booking the artists, securing venues, security. Listen, man, it's a lot of work.
Yeah, because security is a hard thing. If you don't have it fenced around, or you're going to secure your thing.
Yeah.
You understand? And we had a great plan happening in Brockwell Park. Right? A lot of people don't know this, right? There are 5 festivals in a week. In Brockwell Park, right, and it's shared by four different festivals. It's shared by 4 different promotions, right? One is City Splash, which is we.
Yeah.
One is on the track,
right,
which is I think John Bass, and another one is something else, and the other one is something else. So, but we all share the one.
Well, Nikki's
component.
One is one. Yearly.
No, Nikki's one, which is the country show.
Yeah.
That's usually in July.
See.
You understand? Which is completely different and free.
Right.
But this one we may talk about is fence round.
See.
It's fence round.
Oh,
and everybody, the 4 different people use the one facility.
Right.
Like one we use Friday, one we use Saturday, one we use Sunday, and one we use Monday.
Right.
We are going to do the Monday one.
See, bank holiday Monday, that?
Yeah, bank holiday Monday. So you have one festival at the Friday, one at the Saturday, and one at the Sunday.
Right.
3 different, completely different promoters.
Yeah.
Do for them things.
And style of festival.
What it has done is cut down the cost.
See.
Yeah. Because if it was just one person doing that, we'd have to put up the fencing, put up the stage, put up everything. But if you have 4 sharing this festival, that means it split 4 ways the cost.
Yeah.
And that was one of the great things what could happen in the Brockwell Park.
Right.
4 different festivals. But it's only one is the reggae one.
See.
You understand? And what we all always share, the same facility, the staging.
And splitting the cost between the different promotions.
That's
good networking,
That's good. That was good networking and we find out that and we jump on that, you know?
Mm.
But moving on from that, I'm working on some other things as well. Because I've got some plans. I'm working with the Reggae Sunfest people in Jamaica.
Nice.
You understand? Because they want to bring Reggae Sunfest to England.
What?
You understand? Wow. You know, that's a big festival in Jamaica. Now, they want to come to England. And me and them is talking. We're trying to look venues to keep it.
Okay.
Especially football ground.
Okay.
Because we talked and we said football ground will be a great place to put on this thing because the security is already there and everything, entrance, self-contained. All we need is a stage in the middle of the pitch.
But enough of them Arsenal and all them do it, you know, King.
Well, like we got Charlton already.
What
we
you see there?
We get Charlton already. Yeah. Charlton said they don't mind putting it. We're just talking price and thing at the moment. So look out, you may see Reggae Sunfest in London at Charlton Football Ground.
Give thanks.
You know, if it's successful, we do it every year, you understand? So I'm working with Joe Jovanovic.
See.
I don't know if you know Joe Jovanovic. He's the CEO of the first Reggae Sunfest in Jamaica and thing, you know?
Right.
So there's things in the pipeline which I'm moving up from, you understand?
Sound good, man.
You know, stepping up from Utanani and them thing there, you know?
See.
I mean, my kids, them out, I said to me, I said, boy, dad, why are you so working so hard? Just rest, no man. Just tell me what you're doing. We just deal with it.
See.
But, you know, you love the thing. Them did it with me still at work. But me love being there and things. So I just hope God give me more life and long life so we can see and fulfill, you know, those things. And me still play my song.
So how did the I manage and cope during the lockdown season and all that? Like,
well, the lockdown season was like two years out of with life, in a sense, with the music thing, you know.
Was it about reassessing and all them thing there?
Yeah, because when I'm at Utanadi, that's when the lockdown come, you know, and Utanadi had it hard.
Right.
Because most music venues had it hard, and most of the industry, you know, had it hard.
Right.
Bars, pubs, clubs, everything. Because anywhere a crowd gather, had it hard.
Yeah.
And we at Utanani, we used to have to pull on table and say, I'm going to three at a table, two at a table. All them foolishness there and them thing there. People have to come in, rub them hand with sanitize, the thing, sign in so we know if you catch cold, we get. It was a
madness.
Nightmare, man. It was a nightmare, may I tell you.
It was a promoter and
It was a nightmare. And it was a nightmare also for security, because through they have to enforce certain things, you know? Because, you know, when in a club, people are sit down, they want to get up and dance.
Mm.
And if somebody get up and
no
dance.
No dancing, innit? That's right.
No dancing. The people get up and dance, security have a rush and say, no, sit down.
There was no dancing in lockdown.
Appearing some foolish rules, and that's why the whole thing was a fraud, you know? Because I joke.
Man, no,
when you look back on it now and look back, you say, but wait, what we really did I do?
Innit?
You understand? And you line up and you have to line up 4 feet apart all them something there. We have to enforce all these rules. Because if we don't enforce these things, they will curve
lock
our license.
Down. That's what I wanted to get, coming from a promoter and a man who's running a venue. I wanted to get that perspective.
Yeah, man, it was hard for us, you know. Like me say, all these little rules and things, we had to enforce it.
See.
Because you have license, come down and sit down and spy and watch you and see if we're enforcing these rules and them thing there. And the worst thing is the people. Some people just not having it.
Right.
You understand? And then we have to go force and tell them to come out and all the things there, which we don't really want to do.
Yeah.
But because we have to save our license and thing, you know? Because you have some people, they as soon as the security says sit down, and them sit down, and security turn them back, them get up again.
See.
You know, so it's like a
battle.
Yeah, it's a battle. And we went through a period of time with that, because before that, they kind of locked it down completely and we couldn't. And a lot of people just start get hungry and people don't now get no money and no pay. You know, it was kind of hard on a lot of people, especially the staff. You understand? And when they said, yes, you can come back, but at a restricted level, we said, oh, well, there's a light shining.
See.
But that was a nightmare.
Right. Yeah.
But it was a thing like something better than nothing.
Yeah, that's so we did feel.
Yeah.
But when they told us the stringent rules that we have to do and all that,
more
we never opened back, to tell the truth, you know?
A lot of companies, they hit the wall, brother.
Because even with the artist on stage and all them thing there, you know, we have to have a whole bunch of different mics and, you know, everybody have to use a separate mic and
just change up the whole thing.
So
and
not so much I-1, I-1, I-1.
It was hard upon everybody. The lockdown was really hard upon everybody. But we got through and we come out of it, you know. And the day when the government said, well, lift it up, was probably the happiest day of my life at that period of time. Oh my gosh. Yeah. Everybody was so relieved, you know? But the only thing with that relief, we were wondering if they're going to do it again.
Yeah.
That was always on the back of our mind, so they were going to do it again, you know? But me can just tell you, say, within that period, we always say it was a fraud.
Same.
And the funny thing about it, again, this thing what they call COVID, I was at Wootenanny, and me in the office, and there's about 7 of we in the office at work, right? And 7 of them, at some time, see them catch COVID. I was the only one who never catch COVID, same, you know, in the office.
Same.
And these are all younger people than me, you know, because they must say it's a old people thing.
Yeah.
You understand?
Yeah.
And I was the oldest one in the office. And every one of them catch COVID. So them say, I don't know what COVID does, because I have no clue what it was. Yeah. You understand? Yeah. So I want to say, what me I do different from them, which I don't know more than I do what I always do, eat good food, do exercise, drink good juice, and you understand? So that is always was a mystery to me.
See,
when people say them catch it.
Right.
Because I then a place where there's a crowd of people at work, right? On the dance floor I'm talking, you know, and in a club with a crowd of people, and in an office where 7 people is, and I'm the only one in there who never catch COVID.
See.
Yeah, and in an environment, if one man catch it, everybody's supposed to catch it.
Yeah, because them always used to say, so, how come you don't catch it?
Yeah.
And I say, and I used to laugh at them and say, eh, you know, I always say it's a old people thing, I'm older than the world, you know, look at me. You understand? So it's still a world of mystery and question mark over that period of time. I don't know, you know, I don't know. But people say them catch something. I just feel so them just catch a cold, personally. See, I don't know, but some people say them really catch something with different. I can't analyze what them say, because them feel it and catch it. You understand? See.
So outside of music and promoting and all them thing there, what does the I do to relax? Do you have any hobbies? Do you have anything like that?
Football. Because I too love. I have two love. Football, Liverpool. I have two love in life. Music and football.
Oh,
like, you understand? Yes. And music kind of where I elevate to. You understand? Because I could have played football. You understand? Because when I was a teenager, I think I was about 18 them time. I'm just hunting. I did get a trial for Fulham.
Yeah?
Yeah, because I'm a baller, you know. We used to play 12 tribes team and everything. We used to train the team and do everything, you understand? Yeah, and we got for a trial for Fulham. And me did I play with the trial and everything and thing. And me a winger them time, you know. Me used to brush down and boom and gone and gone and leave the fullback.
What position you play?
Wing.
No,
wing.
This was a winger at the time. I leave from winger to midfield and to striker. Yeah, right. But them time I was a winger, I used to brush past the fullback. And I noticed this boy, you know, every minute I try to lick me down, you know. Yeah. But me skillful and beat him. But one time the man give me a kick, he sip on my shin. Oh God, me tumble over. Right? And I get up and never do nothing. Both next time. The man give me another kick, but the same one when he licked me, you know. I just get up and thump him in my mouth, you know. Just get up and thump in my mouth. That was the end of my football career. You understand? That was the end of my football career. Maybe I could have been a big player. I don't know.
Same.
I just carry on with my music and them thing there. But football is a thing I love. Till now, me support Liverpool. And
do you go to games? Go to matches?
I used to back in the days, but not go so much again and thing. But I watch every game them play. Yeah.
Right.
Even if I don't see them, I make sure it's recorded and I go home and I watch it.
Been to Anfield?
Oh yeah, many times.
Atmosphere.
Oh yeah, man. We have all the program them everything and thing. Yeah. But that was in the earliest. That was like in the 70s, late 70s and everything. I not really go much and everything. Right, I was too busy and everything there. But football is my love.
Same.
I love football. Now there's a problem with woman when it comes to football. Football. Everybody play football and me have a big screen, big nice, everything. Yeah,
you
understand?
So lucky me.
You're lucky, you know.
My wife love football.
See.
Yeah.
Me and her sit down and we'll watch her football.
No, she like football, but the way me crazy over here, me in there, I mean, I make up nice and I cuss bad boy and I said this and this.
That's the vibe, isn't it?
That is the vibe when it comes to football and everything.
Looking back now over your career so far, what advice would you give to your younger self?
A younger self? I forget to tell you, you know, me do 20 years of youth work, you know, in a Brixton.
Oh,
I done 20 years.
Why is that not surprising?
For real.
Solid youth work, you understand? See. Because we used to work with the gangs them and get the gangs them to come off the road and stop doing what they're doing. A few guns them we take off of the youth them, you know. Yeah, in a Brixton, man, we used to bring them to the priest. Because we learned that from Jamaica, you know, because community leader used to take the guns them and give to the priests in Nigeria. So bring the same strategy to England and you talk to the youth them, a few of them turning them gun and turn them life and thing. You know, we done that successfully in a Brixton and a few of the man them in a Brixton. 20 years solid. Cause we was independent. We never worked for nobody. Oh, you know? Just a few of we, cause we was like the man them in a Brixton. You know?
Road intervention.
Yeah, we was the road people, the street. The real thing, not somebody working out. So, I get paid, because we never get paid. You know?
Right.
We was just going to the estate, but nobody else no want to go, police no want to go, nobody no want to go, we go.
See.
Dance and talk to the youth them and thing, and turn a lot of the youth them. But me find, say, the biggest problem we did have in that period with the youth thing was the parents.
Right.
You'd be surprised. The parents, because the parents, either they're naive, or they don't want to believe, or they know, and just defending their children and their foolishness.
Yeah.
You understand? God, we make the parents them know, say, you need to check your son or your daughter bedroom when they're not there.
Scene.
Don't come to me and say, boy, no, I can't go search up my picnic. Right, no, you go search that. You'd be surprised where you're finding that. And I say, especially the girls them. Don't pick the girls that innocent, because them up keep the gun for the boy them. You understand? Because the boy them not gonna keep it for themselves. And, enough time, we tell parents to go search the room and then find things in there.
Scene.
Enough time. You understand? But the parents, they're so either ignorant or have blinkers on. They just was a big obstacle to our work.
See.
You understand? Because if they were just to open themselves and be honest, a lot of these crime wouldn't be on. And deal with the youth.
Yeah.
You understand? And know where your youth there. Because me grew up, my youth, because me have five boys me grew up with. And them know all the youth them in a Brixton, know all the road is by them. But them never turn gunman, them never turn gang. Right. Because me as a father, me make them know, say, I'm not in that. And plus, me know how it go from Jamaica and them thing there. So me know how to deal with my youth them. And my youth them never go into that world.
Right. See.
So I blame the parents. Because they never take it on them head to know what their youth is doing. Because me know everything what my youth is doing, you know.
Same.
You understand? And if them are go anyway, I know. You understand? Because I'm a street man. I'm not going to be like, I'm just going to go work and come back. My youth, they go school and come back. You have to know what your youth is up to.
For real.
You know, so I've done 20 years of youth work. And
brilliant.
It was hard. It was hard because we could, I mean, you have some ignorant youth, you know, who could have turned upon we, you know. But true, we was all time rude you to himself.
Seen, yeah.
Brixton. Them kind of respect us.
Yeah.
You understand? Because when we was young, like 18 and them thing there in a Brixton, we used to in a gang too, you know. But it was like soul system gang.
Yeah.
You understand? Yeah. And we used to have a little war with other sound them and them thing. So it wasn't like no, all them youth they are going like no, I walk with you and I fight them. Well, nothing like that. Yeah. We just have a little thing with them. From a different era with sound and it wasn't like how it is now. Yeah. So we had that little experience.
Yeah. Right.
So we could tell you them how to behave and how not to get caught up in a certain things, you know?
It's so important for older males as well to set the example.
Yeah, we was actually setting that example.
Yeah.
A lot of people don't know that about why then 20 years of youth work.
That's good.
Because it was like a quiet thing, you know?
Yeah. Well, Cecil, it's been an absolute pleasure having you,
Richie,
discussing these great achievements of yours.
The history, man.
For real. So, once again, thank you very much for coming in the Spectrum of Roots.
Yeah, man, no problem. It was a joy and an honor and a pleasure. Yeah, so come and get Wolper interviews, you know, but sometimes it's better you interview with your own.
Yeah.
Scene.
Yeah, sir. Come and get a lot of interview with a lot of white people and them thing interview me this and that. But it's not the same vibes, you know?
Right.
But like the vibes here, it's nice. That's why we'll just talk.
We're
going to
do 2-3 hours.
You know it. I will put a thing in, man. You understand? Especially in the early days with Bob Marley and the Wallaway and all kind of thing. I can tell you the whole thing. Tell you about Jamaica history and all them kind of thing. I can tell you the whole political life of Jamaica politics and all the GLP and everything. I don't know, but another time.
For real. Give thanks, my brother.
Bless.
Yeah, man. Rastafari.
Yes, sir. Yeah.